So we're just going to have a slide up on the screen with some names on, which may be familiar to you. So Boris Johnson, J.K. Rowling, Hitler, Putin, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, David Beckham, and Tony Blair. Now, I wonder what you think of those people. And I wonder, I think some of them we probably have a sort of general agreement on. Others of them we might differ on. I know that for some, J.K. Rowling is a hero. To others, they have a less positive view of her. But if you were to rank them, try and rank them in order of goodness, I wonder how you would do that and who would come at the top of your list and who would come at the bottom. And I wonder, where would you put yourself if you added your name to that list? Where would your name come in that list? If you had to draw a line to say, okay, these ones above the line, they're okay. The ones below it are beyond the pale. I wonder where you would draw that line. We like to have our heroes and villains, don't we? So as you probably know, we're in the middle of a series on the Sermon on the Mount, which is Jesus' teaching to his followers on how to live in the new kingdom that he's introducing, the kingdom of God. And today's reading looks at our relationship with others and includes a clear command, don't judge. But in that little exercise we've just done looking at those people, that's exactly what we've been doing, isn't it? We've been making judgments. And we make judgments all the time, especially about others. I was just thinking this morning, quite often we've probably, certainly I remember as a child, we've judged our mothers. You know, oh, she's so embarrassing. Why can't she be like those other cool mothers? We make judgments. So what are we to make of Jesus' command here? Don't judge. Firstly, I think it's important to understand what it's not, what Jesus isn't saying. He's not saying that justice is unimportant, that it's not right for people to be judged in a law court. That wouldn't make sense because we see throughout the Bible that God is a God of justice. And our anger when we see injustice is a God-given sense of right and wrong. So it's not that justice is unimportant. And it's not about abandoning our critical faculties. It's not saying it doesn't matter what anyone does, anything goes, each their own. It's not saying that using our ability to think is wrong. The words judge and criticize have broad meanings, both positive and negative. A music critic or a theatre critic isn't someone who just says bad things about whatever they're reviewing, unless it's a really bad thing that they're reviewing. They're someone who assesses, weighs up, evaluates. And the judges on Bake Off may say some unflattering things if they're deserved, but they also give praise and sometimes even a handshake. So to judge is, in that sense, neutral. It's about making an assessment. And Jesus isn't telling us to switch off our thinking, our brains. It's clear in the Sermon on the Mount, as well as elsewhere in the Bible, that we do need to use our critical faculties to make some sort of judgment. For example, we saw a few weeks ago that Jesus was telling us to be more righteous than the Pharisees. Well, we can only do that if we're assessing, evaluating how righteous they are. So what does Jesus mean here? What is he commanding? A better word to use to translate here is perhaps something like condemn. Jesus is talking about having a judgmental spirit, always finding fault with others, always seeing their flaws. As I've been thinking about it this week, I've discovered I'm quite good at this, at being judgmental. I've caught myself making judgments all the time through impatience, irritation, frustration. It's very easy, for me anyway, to make generalizations. They're always like that. They never do X. Why are they so whatever? And a good way of making judgments like this is in gossip. It's easy to get drawn into it, to write people off, especially if you don't agree with them. So, for example, if we have different political views or we have our own prejudices, when we judge in this way, we're thinking we're right and the other person is wrong. We build ourselves up at the other's expense. Maybe in the workplace where it can be very competitive, you may feel you have to blow your own trumpet. And so implicitly or explicitly, you're disparaging others in order to get on. This is the sort of judging that Jesus is telling us not to do. And then we come on to the reason why judgment of this nature is such a bad idea. The illustration Jesus gives here of the speck and the plank may be a bit of an exaggeration, but he's making the point that we are no better than the ones we criticise. Isn't it so much easier to see the flaws in other people than in ourselves? Or when we're aware of the flaws in ourselves, there's always a justification, a reason, excuse we can give to explain why we're like that. Whereas so often when we're judgmental of others, we do it without understanding their circumstances. We don't stop to consider. I'm reminded of the story that Jesus told in Matthew's Gospel of the unmerciful servant who, in spite of having been let off a huge unpayable debt by the king, demanded every last penny from a fellow servant who owed him a very small debt. We often just don't get how to apply this to ourselves. There's a disconnect between how we see ourselves and how we see others. Forgive us as we forgive others, we say in the Lord's Prayer. The two are linked. And in today's passage, Jesus uses a really strong word in verse 5 to address those who can't see their own imperfections. You hypocrite, he says. If you were here a few weeks ago when we were looking at chapter 6, where Jesus uses that same word, hypocrite, to describe those who make a big show of their giving or praying or fasting. Don't be like the hypocrites, says Jesus. Well, that's fine. He's using the word hypocrite to describe other people. We can be fine with that. Perhaps those who were listening to him felt a bit of self-satisfaction, as we might, at hearing Jesus describe those other people as hypocrites. But now he's using it straight to his followers, and by extension to us. We are hypocrites if we see the flaws in others without being aware of our own. We are setting ourselves up as judge over them when we are equally deserving of judgment, and God alone is the one who can truly judge. The Greek word from which our word hypocrite comes originally referred to an actor, literally someone who wore a mask, as actors did in Greek times, someone who plays a part. And by judging others in this way, we are playing a part as judge, a role which belongs to God. So what about that list that we looked at the start? I wonder who you had at the bottom and where did you draw the line? The thing is, we're all in the same boat. We're all, every one of us, equally in need of God's forgiveness. He doesn't rank us according to merit into those who are only a bit bad and those who are very bad. That may be uncomfortable for us. We don't like to think of ourselves as bad as some of those names on the list. There's another story that Jesus told in Luke's Gospel, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Luke says that Jesus told this parable to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else. You may remember that in the story, the Pharisee prays, thanking God that he isn't like other sinful people, like the tax collector. The tax collector, on the other hand, simply said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus tells us that it is the tax collector who goes home right with God. The good news of the gospel is that forgiveness and the new life that Jesus offers is available to all who will accept it. No one is outside the reach of God's grace, not even those on the bottom of your list. But it's worth noting, Jesus doesn't say that we shouldn't remove the speck from our brother's eye. What he says is that we should only do it once we've dealt with ourselves, our own plank. When we've got ourselves right with God, when we have a right understanding of ourselves, aware of our own flaws and failings, then we're in a position to help others. And it's part of our responsibility to care for one another in the church as family. And there may be times when it's right for us to offer correction. I don't know if you've ever needed to have something removed from your eye. I remember as a child getting sand in my eye on the beach and my dad getting it out for me. If you've ever needed to have your eye, something removed in that way, you'll know that it needs to be done so, so carefully. There is so much potential to cause pain. So, so gently and lovingly. And that's the case if we feel it's right to offer correction to someone. We need to do it from a position of love and gentleness and care. This passage is not saying we always have to bite our tongue, though that's probably a good place to start. But if it's appropriate to call someone to account, we need to examine ourselves first and operate from that place of love, which is generally easier said than done. And maybe we can ask ourselves, how willing are we to receive criticism when it's justified? Do we get defensive? I know I'm good at doing that. Do we try to make excuses? Or do we see it as an opportunity to learn? Since I've started thinking about this passage, I've been more aware of how easily I become judgmental. Why is that? What good does it do? Maybe it makes me momentarily feel falsely a bit superior. Perhaps that's a sign of my own insecurity. Maybe I'm seeing in others the flaws I know deep down exist in myself. But I don't think the answer is to beat myself up about it, but to bring it to God whenever I catch myself doing it, to say sorry, to ask him to show me if it's something I need him to change in me, and asking him to use it maybe by turning the negative thoughts into positive ones about the person. Perhaps there's an opportunity to praise that person, whether to their face or to others. Especially if you find yourself in a gossip situation where people are talking about someone, is there an opportunity to say something nice about that person? I remember a while ago at work we did an exercise in identifying our strengths and weaknesses, and the weaknesses were described as overdone strengths. So, for example, someone who's very good at consulting and listening to others may, if that strength is overdone, become very indecisive because they're too busy trying to find out what everyone else thinks. And that's a weakness. Or someone may be very good at attending to detail, but if they then end up micromanaging everyone, unable to let go, it's a problem. So when we see what we think is a flaw in others, maybe rather than focusing on that overdone bit, the flaw in someone, can we look for the underlying strength which corresponds to it? We all have our flaws. We all have our strengths. We are all equally in need of God's redeeming work in our lives. There's no hierarchy of those who are quite good and can get by on their own merits. We're all works in progress. Let's ask God to help us to see others as he sees them. Lord, forgive us our sins as we forgive others.